90-minute tape converted to 60 minutes, Southern California, Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. The interview of Albert Hing, interview number 58. This is tape 3.
Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. January 26, 1980, second interview with Albert Hing at his office in Los Angeles. Mr. Hing, did you feel that there was hostility toward the Chinese in Los Angeles previous to World War II?
Oh yes. Very much so. There are certain places that we're not allowed to go.
And we like, go. Like what?
Well, there's like nightclubs, for instance.
Did it have a sign outside?
No, they don't have a sign, but they say there's all reserved.
Uh-huh.
Or if they take you in, they put you way out in the corner next to the restroom where nobody can see you. And they give you very bad service. And they don't tell you in so many words, but you'll get the feeling and prejudice and discrimination by the way the service people act towards you.
Could you give me a specific example?
Yes, during my school years, I recall there was a place called Bimini Baz in Vermont.
What?
Bimini Baz. They
Bimini
call it.
Baths, okay.
Well, what they do is people go there to take mineral baths, you know, hot baths and massages.
Oh, baths.
Baths. Oh. Like they have in Japan. Only these are different. These don't have any Japanese girl doing the massaging. They have man masseurs, you know. And I went up there. I tried to get in, and they said, no, we don't allow any Chinese.
Oh, how did you feel?
Oh, I didn't feel very good. I said, well, heck, I can go in the ocean and get just as clean. You see, it depends on the person. My particular case, I would get angry.
Did you
I'll
scream and yell
a,
at them?
I'll just take it philosophically and just walk off, and I'll just remember that that's one place I'm not going to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and also in dances.
What kinds of dances?
Well, the Chinese here, we have our own different groups. They have the basketball club, they call it the Lo Wa Club. And then they have the Chinese girls club, they call it the Mei Wa Club.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sponsored by Mrs. Wong, and then they have the another girls club that's sponsored by Mrs. Wong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
what do they do? I mean,
oh, they have dances like the Lo Wa Club, which is a Chinese basketball.
Right. So what? You are not barred from those, I'm sure.
Oh, no, that's only for Chinese.
Right.
Because we can't go into a Caucasian dance hall and be accepted, you know, on par with the other people.
Dance hall, you mean the kinds of places you pay, like a nightclub?
Yes, yes. Similar. Like the Palladium is now.
Ah.
See, they have the Casino Gardens and Lick Pier down the beach. And Casino Gardens, they don't allow Orientals in there. Yeah, but we go to a place called Lick Pier. And we pay, I think, is it 10 or 15 cents. Dance, we bring our own date, and then we dance.
Mm-hmm.
in those days they have these well-known orchestras, right? Mm-hmm. And those are the only places you can go to. Now, as far as nightclubs concerned, they have a tendency to discourage us from going to nightclubs. Now this, I'm talking about pre-war, World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But during World War II, they let us come in, and still there was some discrimination because they couldn't tell the difference between Chinese and Japanese, you know, because we looked very similar.
Mm-hmm. What about housing before the war?
I wouldn't say it was impossible.
It
was very difficult for us to want to live in what we call a desirable neighborhood. By that, a desirable neighborhood, we mean that in a neighborhood that is within our means. And most of the Chinese like to move out into a neighborhood that isn't deteriorated,
mm-hmm.
where they are generally sent to rent housing projects or apartments. And they send us into what they call a segregated neighborhood. I'm talking about the real estate brokers and the rental agents.
They would refer you to segregated.
Well, we asked them, for instance, like the Crenshaw area.
Mm-hmm.
When that area was first built as a new housing project, and we used to ask about the prices of houses out there. Not myself, some of my friends, and they won't even show a house to a person of Asian extraction. Because, we don't have any houses for sale.
Mm.
And they do have a long list there. But if a Caucasian person walked in, they immediately take them out and show them a house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean, that we, after so many cases and experiences with discrimination, prejudice, my particular situation, I just take it more on a philosophical bent. And I just made the excuse, like, say, this is a white man's country, more of them than us, so we more or less have to live by what they want, you know.
Did you ever feel sorry because you were Chinese?
No. It made me a bigot. That's why I hate this prejudice, discrimination against them.
Bigot against who?
Well, against the Caucasians.
Well, but were you ever in a position where you did the same thing to them that they had done to you or your race?
No. Because we were never given the opportunity where we were in the same position that they were. Because we, as far as they're concerned, we're asking to be their peers, you know,
mm-hmm.
when we're asking to go into a fancy restaurant or a nightclub or athletic club, and they resent that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is why I said that, you know, because there's so many of them, there's a few of us, the only thing you can do is take philosophically. We just turn one cheek and, you know, take it on the other. But you can only take it so long. So I began to feel it a little differently because I wasn't, my philosophy on that began to change during the Second World War. Because at that time, we were supposed to have a common enemy, you know, like the Japanese and the Nazis. But still, even at that time, you could see the discrimination of them sending the Japanese into a camp.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you feel about that?
I feel very badly about that because we can't help the way we look. And see, the Japanese are very visible, whereas Germans and Italians aren't. So, and then again, I took a philosophical bent and I said, well, it's very difficult to fault them for that because, you know, the Japanese are very visible. But then on the other hand, they still should have put the Germans which is also our enemies, and the Italians, which are also our enemies, because they're more or less invisible. They would be more dangerous to this country than the Japanese would.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever voice this opinion?
You see what I mean? Because immediately when you see the Japanese, you know he's an Asian, right? Mm-hmm. But when you see a German, he looks just like any other Caucasian. You can't tell. So they are much more dangerous than the Japanese would.
But did you voice this opinion to anyone?
Oh, well, I mentioned it to some like Caucasian friends, you know. And they agree with me, but then they said, well, it's done, what are you going to do about it? And at that time, the Oriental population has no political clout.
Awesome.
Absolutely none. And generally, when we feel badly about something, we call up, for instance, the newspapers use the terms. Even though they use the word term like Japs,
mm-hmm.
you know, Skippies, little slant eyes, and so forth. And sometimes in the article you use the word Chinaman.
Mm-hmm.
And so we complain, we write the newspaper, you shouldn't use that name.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, how about an Irishman and Englishman and stuff? I said, no, I said, it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I said, the word Chinaman donate something very low class, because that word was used in a degrading sense for the Chinese in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the word Chinaman is not an epithet, it's not a profanity,
mm-hmm.
But it's something that we had to live with in degradation in the much prejudiced and discriminating age, and it shouldn't be used. And they made a picture called Pork Chop Hill. I recall they used the word Chinaman and Chinks all through the picture on the script. That was made with Gregory Peck. They called it Pork Chop Hill. That was about the war in Korea.
That was in the 50s.
The 50s. The Pork Chop Hill was a location where there were a lot of communist Chinese coming in, you know, fighting the Americans at that time, and they had a terrible time. So in that particular picture, they were going to make a sort of a documentary of what the American forces have to contend with.
Mm-hmm.
So they use the word chink and Chinaman all the way through script,
mm-hmm.
because some of the Caucasians that were injured, naturally they're going to utter some nasty words about these or the dirty so-and-sos, and you
mm-hmm.
substitute that word for it. So when we heard about the script, I and another fellow, an attorney, I think, Mr. Harm Kwan, wrote a letter to got rid of the United Artists and objected to them using Chinaman and Chink all through the years.
Was that the first time you had protested?
That's the first time we actually protested.
Mm-hmm.
I would say en masse, because we brought it out at the Chinese American Citizens Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Mr. Kwan and I had the responsibility of talking to the people, to the director that made the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I called.
Did they do anything?
Oh yes, I called the director. I forgot where this RKO was done out of us. Anyway, he says, I don't see anything wrong about using the word Chinaman and Chink, you know. So after I explained to him why the word Chinaman has been so misused and misunderstood, you know, through all the years previously, he finally understood. I said, same thing. I said, are you Jewish faith, aren't you? He said, how do you know? I said, well, how do you like us to make a picture and call the heaps and Jews and kikes? That's the same thing. So he understood.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally they struck out all the words of Chinaman and Chink. They cut them all down to bare minimum. And I think they used the word Chinaman only once, because I looked at the picture.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time they used red Chinese. You know.
Oh, the red Chinese.
So that was.
Oh, okay.
That was the only time that.
And previous to World War II, did you see go to see movies where the Chinese were portrayed in a bad light, or that they?
No, because the Chinese were the allies of the United States. They're not
previous. Before World War II.
Before, oh yes,
how
oh
do you
yes.
Think the Chinese were portrayed.
Even to this present day, like I say, the prejudice, racial prejudice, is in the closet now. Sometimes they still forget it, and they'll speak out, because on Johnny Carson's show, they interviewed this black trumpet player. They interviewed this black trumpet player, Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, and Johnny Carson was asking him about the experiences in his life. And Armstrong mentioned the word, oh, I went down to Chinatown and I played some music for these Chinamen down there, and, you know, I had a wonderful time and all that. And that's just one incident.
Hmm.
And,
what about before World War II? How did you think the Chinese were portrayed in movies and on the whole in general?
Oh, generally in a degrading sense.
Mm-hmm. What kind of roles were they
playing? Oh, they were only playing roles like laundryman.
Mm-hmm.
No ticky, no washy. Or cook. Comical cooks. And not even a houseboy.
Mm-hmm.
The houseboys were portrayed by Japanese, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And
what about the Charlie Chan series?
The Charlie Chan was a little different. The Charlie Chan was a sort of a pseudo comedy of about a Chinese detective, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that portrayed Charlie Chan, he did an excellent job. And what they did, they pulled his eyes up to make it slant. And if you don't understand, Chinese eyes don't slant.
Mm-hmm.
They're almond shaped, but they're not slanted.
Mm.
See, because a large percent of Chinese have what they call a heavy lid,
mm-hmm.
you know. Even I have a heavy lid, because my lid will come down, push my eyelashes into my eyeball. Well, I mean, you know, that's part of, that's what happened. And I noticed now a lot of Japanese people were having their eyelids changed. You know.
Yeah, to where you can tucked see
it.
The fold or something.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm having problems. I get a little older, my skin becomes a little flaccid, and my problem is getting my eyelashes out of my eyeball. Well, that's one of the things. You have to live with it. Now, the Jewish people, with those great big noses they got, they do it all the time to get the nose bobbed. And I can see where the Oriental is going to have their eyes fixed.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal, but...
Did you make any protests about those roles that... the way the Chinese were being portrayed in movies before World War II?
Oh, they're... Not myself. What we do, we write letters, and, you know, letters don't do any good. As I said before, World War II...
Did you write letters before World War II?
Oh, yes, you wrote letters, and in fact, I wrote a letter to a judge. He used the word Chinaman, and he allowed one of the witnesses to use the word Chinaman.
In a court?
In a court.
How
so
did you hear about that?
I was there. Yeah. I was representing the defendant, who was Chinese.
you were not a lawyer.
No, I was an interpreter.
I see.
And
this
is after war. This is 19s in the 60s.
Oh, I see. No, we want to talk about the time before.
Oh, the time before?
Yeah.
No, all you can do is write letters, and generally your letters are unanswered. You know, they choose to ignore it because...
Did you write any letters before World War II?
Oh, yes.
To who?
Well, I wrote a letter to...
And about what?
Herald Examiner.
Mm-hmm.
They use the word Chinaman.
Mm-hmm.
And so we write a letter about that. See, the word Chinaman, see, chink. I mean, there's no question, you know, it's a derogatory mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Chinaman is something that is used in a derogatory sense when they talk about us to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're such a small minority, we can't do anything. In those days, it's the same way. We can't do anything then because, like I say, there's no political clout.
Mm-hmm. When did you feel that the hostility toward the Chinese disappear? And maybe I should clarify to say that a hostility
softened
or prejudice They're not the same thing. Hostility is a much stronger form.
Well, let's call it understanding. I think it's really a misunderstanding of the stereotyping and the shading of the truth when they write stories about the Chinese. Because
they? And what kind of
The writers.
The script writers?
Well, as far as the movie is concerned, the script writers and the people that write novels. I imagine, I never read any novels about this famous character called Fu Manchu.
Oh.
So I imagine they must have a lot of references there to the Chinese used in a derogatory sense.
Mm-hmm.
And before the war, the word Chinaman and Chink was quite commonly used in identifying the Chinese. They don't say the American Chinese or the Chinese people. They say, well, those Chinamen. And to this day, they still use it.
Do you think they mean, when they say those Chinamen, do they mean it derogatory?
Depends on how it's used.
Or do they really think they're ignorant?
I would say 50% of it's misunderstanding. And
of
50%,
the
meaning and the connotation.
Mm-hmm.
And 50% of it, they used it because they felt that it's just as good a word as Irishman and Englishman, and so forth. Yeah?
Have you ever heard of Chinese comparing themselves, or other people making a comparison between Chinese and Jewish people? In terms of doing business?
Doing business?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Jews always said that the Chinese are smart businessmen, and I know the Chinese have always admired the Jews as being smart businessmen. So I don't know whether the Chinese are saying that to disarm the Jewish businessman, or whether the Jewish man is saying that to the Chinese to disarm them while they're doing business together.
Now, do you feel that way? Do you feel that the Jewish people are good businessmen?
They're very, very good. They're sharp. Businessmen. They're very hard workers.
Just like the Chinese?
Yes, that's right. A lot of people don't. They think the Jews came to all their fortune by luck and by being sneaky and doing things underhand. Not that they don't, nor the Chinese do, they don't either. But they're very hard working. They work day and night, so,
mm-hmm.
So you can't have anything better if you don't have the brains to make it. You got to use your muscle to do it, and that's what the Chinese were doing.
Did you ever join any associations in Chinatown?
I joined the Chinese American Citizens Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the only association I feel is worth joining, because it is supposed to be a non-political group,
mm-hmm.
except for the betterment of the Chinese people.
When did you join it?
1940.
How about any family associations? None of those? District associations?
No, I haven't joined family associations. In fact, I don't know which family association to join.
No.
Well, because my particular family is so small.
Ah.
And
not so many laws around here, huh?
Oh, there are quite a few, but not as many as Chan's.
Oh, yeah. Which were the most important families in Los Angeles?
I would say the Wongs, and this from my experience from the people that I know, you know, I might be completely wrong.
Are you talking about before World War II? Right?
Before, oh yes, the Wongs, the Ungs.
Ungs?
Well, because they're large families.
You see. Oh, how do you spell that?
U-N-G.
Oh.
Dong.
Ung, uh-huh.
And they were pretty influential. They're the Lees, the Chans, not necessarily in that order.
Mm-hmm. They were prominent, or they were important simply because there were lots of them.
Yeah, they're larger families.
Did they do anything?
Beg your
pardon? Did they do anything for the community, or do anything to attract people's attention?
Well, the only time they do anything to attract, when you say attract people, you're talking about attracting people in the community or outside of the community?
Yeah, getting attention of people within the community to say, you know, the Wongs perhaps are common because, you know, they've got several judges in their family and whatnot.
Federal judges?
No, I'm just for saying, for example.
In those days, there's no Chinese judges.
Yeah, well, I was thinking.
Present time.
In other words, did they become prominent by numbers?
By numbers. The Wongs are by numbers.
Same
and they do have several very prominent Wongs.
Mm-hmm. Who are they?
Well, there was a Thomas A. Wong, who was one of the few doctors at that time in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Thomas, also Thomas Wong, who was a very well-known, a produce man. And, oh yes, there also a family, a Louis family, who was very prominent in the produce. See, in those days, there's only produce or restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, there's also the Suhu family,
mm-hmm,
that are prominent.
Any other individuals that are prominent?
Individuals? Those that I name, let's see, I named Thomas Wong, the doctor Thomas Wong, the produce man.
Would Benson Wong, Benson Fong?
Benson Fong wasn't here then.
I see.
He wasn't that old then.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Y.C. Hong, who is the only Chinese attorney, I believe, in Los Angeles. He's the immigration attorney.
Uh-huh. Y.C. Hong.
Also, there was B.Y. Hall, who was the only Chinese insurance agent. H-A-L-L. Oh, he has since passed away. I'm just naming those.
Uh-huh.
And a gentleman named N.S. Yearn, who was also an insurance agent.
Yearn?
Y-E-R-N? Y-U-E-N. Nsingen, below Ngla. Yeah, that was just like my name. Got it twisted around. They call him Yuren, but that actually he's below Ng.
I see. Do most Chinese live together in the same community?
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little scattered, but they did. They seemed to congregate together, partly by choice and partly by prejudicial circumstances.
Mm-hmm. If the neighborhood changed, for instance, if another group, ethnic group, moved in and became the dominating group, would they move somewhere else to just to be close to other Chinese? In other words, if a new Chinese community was started and the old one was getting mixed with other groups, would they move? Or would they just stay put right there?
No, they would stay put. Because if anything, the Chinese are generally pretty loyal to their own group, you know, as you well know.
What did Chinese do with the money they saved? Did they gamble? Did they put it in
Yeah, they
deposit?
Gamble all right. Oh yeah, and they save.
They use their
money just like anybody else. They're no different than the Caucasians or the blacks or the Spanish when they have money. They have a tendency to be a little more thrifty. I would say that much.
What kinds of things do they spend their money on? You know, other than gambling, which would do many.
You're talking
gamble?
About my observation of the Chinese other than myself, right?
Right, right. Do they gamble mostly, or do they buy houses, or maybe send it back to China? Or what?
They can't buy houses in those days.
Okay.
No people of Chinese descent are allowed to own.
Before World War II? I know several instances where they have.
Well, I mean, if they weren't born in this country.
Yeah. Was that a written
An alien? Law? You're talking about an alien was able to buy real estate here and own it? No.
Well, his wife was born here.
His wife? Yeah, it's an American citizen.
His wife was an American
That's
citizen.
Right.
But he was not.
He cannot. You see, if the Chinese were allowed to buy and own property the same as the Caucasian immigrants, they would have been a very powerful force in California. Mm-hmm. See what happened to the Italians. They own all the vineyards and all the controlling finances in San Francisco, all the Italians. They were immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Did they mail it back to China? Did most people send some?
Yeah, they do. A large percentage of them have families in China, and they send money back.
You did.